to almost indistinguishable from blindness. Dreaming you're in paradise and waking up in the dark, that's Chinatown. Thinking you've got it figured out and realizing you're dead, that's Chinatown. This is a book about Chinatowns. Roman Polanski's, Robert Towns, Robert Evans's, Jack Nicholson's. The ones they made and the ones they inherited. Their guilt and their innocence. What they did right, what they did wrong, and what they could do nothing to stop. Part 1. Justice. Sharon Tate looked like California. Studying her from across the restaurant table, Roman Polanski could see it was impossible. She was laughably wrong for the part. He needed a burnished, preferably Jewish look, the kind of wintry shtetl waif Chagall might have painted onto a black sky. Polanski had named his character Sarah Chagall Chagall for that reason. And with Roman, there always was a reason. He had deliberately set the fearless vampire killers against the heavy, fragrant bygones of the Eastern Europe of his childhood, his home before the Nazis, before the Polish Stalinists. But this girl was as Eastern European as a surfboard. Casting her, he would desolate again all that they had desolated before. There was no reason, therefore, to continue the meal. In fact, as Roman had explained quite clearly to Sharon Tate's manager, Marty Rantzehoff, there really was no reason to have this dinner in the first place. But Rantzehoff, in addition to managing Tate, was producing vampire killers and had insisted on the meeting. Forget her inexperience, he implored Roman. She's a sweet girl, and she's very pretty, and she's going to be a big, big star. Trust me. I've seen thousands of girls, and Sharon's different. She's the one. Trust me. Rantzehoff is a perfect example of a hypocrite, Polanski would come to understand. He's a Philistine who dresses himself up as an artist. Why hadn't Roman recognized the type earlier? He had never worked with a Hollywood producer, but he was no naive. He knew the stories. They were all the same. Well, the producers always said, we love the rushes, we love the dailies. What you're doing is great, but can you do it cheaper and faster? Creative dinners like these were precisely the sort of feigned artistic rondelets so agonizingly familiar to Hollywood code and conduct that made him want to throw down his napkin and run screaming, back to Repulsion, back to Knife in the Water, films he made his way, the European way, according to his reasons. But Roman did not throw down his napkin. Instead, he let the girl know, in little ways, silences mostly, that he did not want to be there. When Roman reported back to Rantzehoff the next day, Rantzehoff insisted on a second dinner. Find something for her, Roman, he said. They had another dinner, this one worse than the first. Polanski could see she was trying to impress him, an Oscar-nominated director, talking, babbling, laughing too much. But he was not impressed. Still, after dinner, walking through London's Eaton Square, he tried to embrace her. She recoiled and ran home. This, Polanski recognized, was his old behavior. He knew that his attraction to Sharon, or any woman, stirred in him feelings of terrible sorrow as ancient as long-lost wars. For years now, the certainty of loss had corrupted his every longing, and his resultant sadness summoned up the worst in him, for it was better, life had showed him, to be sorry than safe. So he would make himself superior. He would be arrogant, callous, abrupt. With women, and there were many women, he would lie and cheat and hurt. Over the course of those first two dinners, he would reduce Sharon to the size of her own waning self-esteem, and then, in the days and nights to follow, he would admonish himself for doing it. It was a pattern. He knew that, and he knew the reasons. He didn't like it, but it made sense. At their third dinner, Polanski apologized. This time, he seemed to take a dedicated interest. Where did she come from? Texas. Who were her parents? Dolores and Paul Tate, an officer of the U.S. Army. They moved around a lot, she said, depending on where he was stationed. By the time she was 16, in fact, she had lived in Houston, Dallas, El Paso, San Francisco, and Richland, Washington. In Italy, in high school, she learned Italian. Moving as often as they did, Sharon didn't make many friends, but the friends she made were real friends. At home, the oldest of three sisters,